This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians on which the Joy Studios stand. We pay our respects to the Wurundjeri, Boonwurrung, Taggawurrung, Dja-Dja-Wurrung, and the Wathaurong people of the Kulin Nation, and to their elders past and present. Welcome to As I Was Saying, produced at Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. My name is Lana Wolf. Can't anybody see it? Eddie Donald and the Transients are a six-piece band from Alice Springs, which formed in late 2013 to bring the songs from Eddie's EP, The Endless Shores of the Inland Sea, to the stage. With a wild array of influences from lashings of operatic theatricality to delicately woven electronic production, acoustic world roots to gritty alternative influences, the music of Eddie Donald and the Transients carries a trans-genre cinematic epicness. Eddie's stunning emotive voice with vivid lyrics are the backbone of the music they have produced. Their show at Midsummer was a gripping and detailed audiovisual performance, showcasing layered and complex songs set against visual productions of the macro and micro of abstracted landscape and rust. Their work approaches ideas of gender identity, isolation, and inclusion, questions of privilege and the social responsibility, or reflected in the unfathomable enormity of the desert. The band showcases the artistry of soloist Isabel Kirkbride, vocalist and choral player Rebecca Matthews, violinist and vocalist Claire Wieland, percussionist and drummer Sean Close, bassist, accordionist, and ukulele player Svetlana Bjunk, and singer-songwriter and guitarist Eddie Donald. I went along to see Eddie Donald and the Transients and got Eddie and Svetlana into the studio for a chat. I suggested to Eddie and Svetlana that perhaps if the band's Massive Attack and Portishead had a music baby, it could be called Eddie Donald and the Transients. And this is how they replied.
In terms of other influences, I mean, a lot of singer-songwriters for me and a lot of singular voices. And I draw on non-musical influences on imagery and poetry. And I was talking to someone just yesterday about the fascination between... There's a lot of mythological references in the sound of the music and in the writing of the music, which is a fascination about the crossover between myth and what we call science. And to me, it's all a kind of an opportunity to access wonder at what's sort of going on around us and to question and to think about and talk about that. I suppose that some of those bands that you've mentioned also do that in a lot of ways, and I suppose there's a depth to their sounds that is something that I value really highly in a lot of music, is being able to go as far in as you can and as far out as you can, and to be able to try and capture those things maybe sometimes in the same moment or in consecutive moments, I feel like is a massive thing that I'm looking for when I listen to music live or, in the headphones or out speakers or wherever that's coming from is to be transported in some way.
Well, to be able to render music that has got such weight and depth to it, as well as like the really high and fine, delicate subtlety, it's no mean feat, you know.
Which is also kind of reflective of the kind of instrumentation and the kind of musicians that are composing the band. In the band we have, you know, it's not a kit drummer. Sean's a percussionist and has come from a background of learning African rhythm and come to make Sean Scott a kit that's devised of her own making. The same with, you know, the way Svet plays the bass and, you know, the accordion and even the ukulele and things like the kora and the violin, the way the strings are in there. I think, yeah, there's a lot of intricacy to that and definitely part of wanting people to hear that, which is almost a kind of like, you know, that's definitely an orchestral thing, the desire for people to hear, yes, the messages, yes, the songs, yes, the lyrics, yes, the voices, but hear all the different elements that go into to make it more than just what it would be without those elements. You know, there's no point to have them there. So the subtlety is really important and a challenge to come across in the sound.
For many people, it's not quite music that they would necessarily stand up and dance to. They probably sway to it, but it's an immersive kind of experience. So I think that they're just comfortable enough just to be seated and to let it sort of like wash over them.
One particular song that I felt resonated deeply as a member of a very diverse queer community was the song Boy Lady. Before Eddie Donald and the Transients played the song at Midsummer, Eddie introduced the song in such a way that it was both poetic and deeply affecting in and of itself.
This is the song the boy lady sings.
Eddie, Svetlana and I discussed the introduction of the song and how that song came into existence. The words that you used to introduce the song, the visuals that it brought are still with me.
Mm-hmm.
I have been over quite a lot of Australia and knowing that it was based in Central Australia.
Yeah.
When you were talking, I can't remember all of the words you used, but I remember the word grit.
Yep.
And I remember visualizing people kind of on their bellies through that red dirt at the top has that layer which is so fine that it's almost like powder, but underneath is really hard. And that kind of dirt which stains everything pink if you put it in the wash.
That's it. That's the one. You got it.
You talked about in that introduction the history of trans, intersex, gender diverse, androgynous people, like you kind of named. And you mentioned something about have always been here from the beginning of history.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was envisaging that, all of the stuff that I know started coming into my head and my mind went to Leslie Feinberg's Transgender Warriors. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, Stone Butch Blues, where Jess calls themselves a he, she.
Yep.
And then we get into the song. Can you just take us through how did that song happen? Where did it come from and what does it mean?
The history of that song. Well, in terms of I could start here with when I wrote it, which I can still remember exactly where I was, and I was sitting on a cliff top. In fact, I started writing it walking up a beach in the sort of about 4 hours north of Sydney on the coast there, an incredible, beautiful deserted beach. No one else was there. And I walked up to the headland and I had this, hey now, like that part that's in throughout the song that keeps repeating. And I had that in my head, and I had this kind of three feel, the song's in this three feel. And just these words started coming, and I suppose, you know, my whole entire life has been a reflection on that feeling of the experience of, you know, being born into a body that I felt wasn't mine. Very kind of textbook trans experience, which I have put into a lot of songs in different ways, but never so it came together on that day in that way, because I was feeling I wanted to create images that enabled space for the different elements of gender that exist, which often we just put into two boxes, he and she, but that I experience and many people experience as so many different things. And as a young child, I felt really, really identified with wanting to be male, and obviously grew up not feeling like that was a possibility. It wasn't, didn't feel like a possibility to transition in the ways that now feel available to me. Then I mythologized it for myself, and I made it an inevitability in my mind that that would happen. I remember hearing stories of people going through adolescence and just naturally transitioning genders, and I felt so passionately about it that if I thought about it long enough, you know, I wouldn't develop breasts, I'd grow my beard that I wanted, I'd all of these things. And so adolescence was a huge letdown for me, and I suppose also a time when I started to examine ideas of patriarchy and feeling repelled by that, and also at war with myself to feeling repelled by the idea of just falling into that and desiring to be part of that oppressive force that I started to see around me. Many different experiences in my life, including direct experiences of that oppression, led me to a place where I was like extremely confused about something that had felt quite clear at a certain point, pushed it down a lot of times, and come to this place, you know, at that time where I realized that I'm, as a trans person, I'm not transitioning to this destination that's male, but wanting those aspects of myself to be visible. And so I started to express this as a boy lady, because I didn't want any of those aspects to be invisible, and I didn't want to have to suppress any parts of myself as I would wish for anybody else. It's not to devalue people's experience of wanting to transition and become male if you were born female bodied, but that my experience was, wow, my world's been blown apart by my socialization, by my experiences, and this liminal space and this experience of that people can't quite put their finger on, and the androgynous image is, it's not reflected much at all around us, and we don't have that affirmed very much, people who have that experience, and to the point where there's hardly any language for it, there's hardly anywhere that you can, you know, refer people just go through their whole lives without even thinking about it, and yet that experience has existed, you know, histories and herstories and records and stories have been telling those stories since the day dot, from my research anyway. And of course that makes complete sense. And so that's, I suppose, how that song came together. I wanted to put in images of masculinity and femininity, and also images of, well, the ocean obviously is always looming in my songs. I can't help it. And I was by the sea. Just the image of this boy lady came to me, and somehow it was removed at that point, but then I realized that that's me that I'm expressing. And in the second verse it goes in to say, you know, these are the shapes the lady man brings, and, you know, breathtaking liminal singular things and new stories threaded have been woven in. The concept of there's such a diversity of stories, and all that this kind of development in educating people and talking about issues of gender and diversity is asking people to open, not to close, not to discard what they know, but to say it's always been there. Why are we closing the doors on this massive percentage of people? Like, more and more and more people are identifying with this, the more that it's made available to people. And it isn't about sexuality. It's about something quite distinct from that. And so that song was sort of wanting to open my experience and to acknowledge all of the diversity as well. So to name it in the way for me that feels right, but to open it to all of the people that I feel that solidarity with. Yeah.
Well, as a musician, responding to Eddie's music and poetry in the way that I naturally do, whenever I'm performing that song, the place I go to is that I am crew member of this beautiful big ship, like a mythical ship, or could even be like a constellation or something. Like, so for some, it's something that's quite sort of metaphysical for me, but I feel the pulse of the beating of water and the churning of water and the conscious kind of, like you say, that liminal place. It has the sparkle, it has light, it has treasure. And so the boy lady is like the captain of the ship that I'm the crew on. And so I feel that we're on a ship that has basically, we don't have a country, we're a place in oceans, you know, where there's this freedom and this freedom of movement and fluidity. And so I kind of like relate to it in that way. So
wow.
I always find myself swaying and I'm totally on that ship.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we are heading for distant shores, you know, the distant horizons, and it's twilight.
Run, 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 your old ship to ground. Run, 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 ground, 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 ground. Let your tired mind breathe.
What do you think other people get out of that song?
I've had a variety of different feedback. And the last shows, you know, a very, very dear friend of mine came and said, like, that music, and particularly I know that song for them, is like me. They were like, that's me. That's me coming out in a musical form, and to experience that is so completely euphoric. I think for some people it's a point of connection. I know certainly the first time we ever did the show, you know, my family was there, and it was a way of having a conversation with people as well. To use those images that make up a binary but put them next to each other in a way where they sort of overlap with one another is sort of blatantly saying, this is recognizable to you, whoever you are. I'm putting these two things together to say something to you. So I suppose I also had feedback from people who don't have never considered themselves to be questioning that part of themselves, and to be like, wow, I can really start to relate to something that I never considered myself to be a part of. So in a way, it's kind of just inviting other people in as well. And I suppose, yeah, so it can be a really positive, euphoric thing for people, and also probably kind of emotional, sort of something I've witnessed for some other people. But yeah, I hope a point of connection and something that's inviting to people's diversity and kind of, you know, humanity, I suppose.
Which you played at the Midsummer Sessions, which I found deeply touching, is a song about being a white person in the Northern Territory. The Northern Territory is a place where the Emergency Response Act is still in place, an act which is otherwise known as the Northern Territory Intervention, which government suspended the Racial Discrimination Act to implement. We hear songs about black people talking about black experiences, or white people talking about what they think black experiences are, but not about what it's like to be a white person in a place like the Northern Territory.
That one came out of a lot of thinking too, and it's because I've almost never written anything about any of those thoughts, because I feel such a high level of sensitivity, like living in the area that I do, where, I mean, you can come to the city, the impacts of colonization have made people struggle almost invisible in terms of Aboriginal people that once inhabited this, you know, very ground that these high rises are built on. It's really abstract for many people, but it is by no means abstract in Alice Springs or the Central Desert. And the intricacies, the incredible knowledge and relationships of the people that do live, practice culture, cope with, you know, the huge impacts of colonization, globalization, capitalism, the current government. There's so much nuance to that that I've always felt really, really reluctant to say anything. And obviously, as folks with white skin who support, who have the desire to support and move on and change things, and but really not just speak about it, there's just a level of care about how that's done. You can support people in a number of ways, but you will always have the privilege or that's afforded by ridiculous your skin color and everything that goes along with that, which I've often seen as this image of like, here I am, and I don't even, as a white person, I might be totally asleep to the fact that to a person of color, I come with a horror movie set backdrop behind me. So if I approach this person and I'm trying to help with my Edward Scissorhands fingers and I'm just scratching everything up, being clumsy, unless you like have a minute to stop and go, hey, maybe these people, you know, of course they can see past the backdrop and they can see past the history, which is incredible. That blows my mind that people can see past that, and they do. But I suppose it's like, well, what can we do? Like, and I thought about that a lot, and I started writing earlier last year, just writing, not thinking I'm writing songs or writing anything. I'm just writing all of these ideas. And one of them was that idea about the white shadow, which is essentially, you know, as I was talking before, that song about like kind of like a white wash or some kind of bleach that bleaches us all. And the idea that many people probably don't, if we think about it, don't actually really identify with whiteness in that way as a metaphor for something that's actually causing destruction to ourselves, to everybody else, to the environment, to the social structures, to, you know, taking resources. I mean, it was mind-boggling, but I was like, hang on, that is my physical heritage, is that. What the hell does that mean? If nobody's going to talk about it, if we're not going to examine it, if we're not going to own up to it and be accountable for it, you can't go into a space and process your whiteness. We need to give voice to that, and we need to admit to it, and we need to also strengthen the opportunities to make the choices to not align with that, but not by saying that's not me, or I'm not racist, or I'm not white, I'm not, you know, I'm not the enemy. It's like, no, I am all of those things, and it's not my choice that I've come to that place. I've been born with certain heritage that aligns me with these things, but what the hell am I going to do about it? So I suppose the same thing, like I have a lot of passion around this, and that's, you know, also because all of the members of the band, Svet and I were talking about this earlier, we all work in remote areas, in communities with people of diverse language groups, Aboriginal people all over the Central Desert, and we're all afforded the privilege as white people who can come in and work in those communities of learning and experiencing things that no longer exist in other parts of Australia, and definitely no longer exist anywhere else in the world because they're unique to here. And you really can't look past that without wanting to be really, really careful about how you approach talking about any of that stuff. I hope the words that come forward are the ones that I have the enfranchisement to speak about. But in all the music, in all the other nooks and crannies of what we're doing, is it's infused with this knowledge and wisdom that comes from something that I'm afforded a huge privilege to participate in at some level. And I don't really feel I can talk about it, but it can come through in sound and poetry, and then I really can get into the nuts and bolts of whiteness as a white person, and try not to point the finger at people, but to sort of invite people into a space to consider what that means and why aren't we talking about it? Why is it always we're not this, we're not that, we're not racist, we're politically correct, we're this and that, rather than we're a part of something that no longer serves any of us? How the hell we're like some giant toddler baby that's just, you know, got a meat axe in the hand. swinging it around willy-nilly, what are you going to do about it?
Engaged in these remote places with people who are systematically oppressed is incredibly confronting in so many different ways, because we don't agree with the structures and the forces of oppression. So, but we are somehow we're affiliated
connected
with them.
To them.
So
yeah.
We kind of have to transcend. Well, we naturally transcend that horror movie backdrop, you know, that
yeah.
we come with, to be able to connect with people purely in a very authentic place that is the only place of connection is to actually go outside of that, which is very much a heart and soul kind
yeah.
of connection. So
and just a relationship, isn't it? It's like
the relationship.
That's what transcends it is, oh, I have a relationship to this person and they have a relationship to me. And it's in terms of like, strategies for how to, you know, like, what even is that? Why does our government feel that we need strategy? Like, the absurdness of those concepts to people who have been living in a place for over 40,000 years with a whole system of cultural values that do not in any way relate to a whole system of, you know, our cultural psyches are so different. Why the hell would they entertain any of those ideas? I think people don't get it. They don't. And I suppose that's probably a good thing at some level, but it means that the way to do anything, it's like, duh, it's the way you do anything ever. It's like you make a connection and that's it. And you can't prescribe anything beyond that. And then a million things happen.
And then ironically, the thing that we all have in common is that we are participants in an imposed social reality, and while there are many things that we find really ugly about it and imposing, there are still things that enable us to somehow like work together.
Yeah.
So there's this whole irony thing as well that we're carrying, and which is very much present, you know, in our daily life interactions. So from whatever perspective you're coming from, yeah, I think that's a uniting force, is that it's like we all think that this whole sort of thing is just it's closing
the gap. If we really want to get down to the nitty gritty, is about white people taking accountability. You know, like that's so obvious. It's so obvious that no one's doing it, saying it. It's all about that over there. It's the elephant. It's the hideous, stupid thing. You can't, like, we're closing the gap. And there's weapons and flailing arms and the highest rate of the removal of children, like more than the stolen generation, happening now in these places. Like, it's absurd. How actually madcap do we want to get before it all comes tumbling down, you know?
The whole album is about landscapes. It's about identities, and it's about orality, self-knowledge, and getting that through in a really beautiful way. How does living in Central Australia affect you as people creatively and in terms of how you continue to flourish as individuals? For a really simple question.
It's a beautiful question.
I think so too. There are a lot of queer people in Central Australia.
Yeah.
I heard that recently and I went, oh.
There's a absolutely amazing community, queer community there.
Yeah. And
growing.
And also, if you look at the artistic community as well, there is a high concentration of artists in Central Australia as well. Mm. Just looking at the population, it's like significant. So there's quite a dynamic atmosphere of, I guess, people really feel quite free in a way to be themselves, despite whatever obvious, you know, bigots everywhere, you know, so people are going to be doing that sort of stuff. It doesn't matter
haters
where you are.
Hate.
Yeah, that's right. But there's a certain liberty about really being yourself in Alice and beyond. I think that something that makes the atmosphere so comfortable, the relationships that we have with Indigenous people that we've made over the years, and those connections are very accepting. You don't really experience any. Well, I haven't experienced any prejudice.
Never.
From any of the people that I work with, you know, who are Indigenous. So there's that sort of makes me feel really comfortable.
Mm.
And also that there's a mutual celebration, like we celebrate who we are and how we connect and our I guess our ability to make art or to. Well, I guess having a spirit of celebration and being able to express ourselves artistically however we want is something that is a uniting force, you know?
Yeah. And I suppose there is a super strong community that's emerging as well there, I think. There's been a lot of work in the last 2 years amongst a group that's called Brothers and Sisters NT. That's just a group of people who are really, really wanting to open up resources, educating services, and also connecting with younger people, supporting brother boys and sister girls to not necessarily come forward or whatever, but to feel connected to some resources and also their families, resources to pass on to their families, but also for services in town and out of town to come on board with being very respectful of the diversity that exists for people's sexuality, agenda.
And inclusive.
Yeah. And that's been a huge, I mean, that's always existed there too as well. And there's been many people coming from other places who are queer or identify as lesbian or gay or intersex people. And now that those communities of brother boys and sister girls coming together with the queer community that's come to Alice Springs has been a real amazing like flourishing of all these possibilities, because you have that intersectionality of people who are expressing those stories that show the impacts of colonization and of racism, and also the impacts of being like those people are, especially young people, some of the most vulnerable people in terms of just not wanting to continue in life because there is absolutely nowhere that you can find support. So I think in a way, like Svet was saying as well, just a general level of acceptance from people in terms of sometimes I've had some very funny conversations with old ladies and people that I've worked with, and they've been some of my favourite because I can break things down really simply and then the next minute they're just over it. They're like, oh, yep. And then you're just getting on with stuff. And that's really refreshing as well. I think you're referring in your question as well to how that relationship to place and, you know, how that's found its way into what we're doing and into our community. I think it's really, if you stay for any amount of time in the Central Desert, you have a relationship to that place. It's so palpable that you can't ignore it. And if you don't get it, then usually the place seems to give you a boot and you're just out of there and you can't stand to be there. But for most people, like, feel like sometimes you have the tiniest fragment of an insight into how it is for people whose lineage goes back as far as the Aboriginal people that live, say the Arunda people that live around Alice Springs. You get a fragment of understanding for a second, and it's like you say, it's like breathing. It's like it goes without saying. It doesn't get separated out. It doesn't get compartmentalized. It's not this individual in relation to a place. It's just all something that absolutely feeds and nourishes everybody who's there. And in terms of creativity, I think for me, I've never experienced the level of creativity that comes to me when I'm in some of those places in the desert. The level of inspiration from just being in those places in the land there is like mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Lifetime's worth of writing it's, and
exactly
creating.
I mean, we have these opportunities to go into this country, which is resonant with lore and legend, and we, well, I guess we have opportunities to just attune to this, you know, to be still and to feel the vastness of it all. So I guess that really does infuse, you know, our perceptions and our expressions.
And I suppose also, like in saying, you know, we're free to, as queer people, express a whole bunch of things, but also I suppose that you do end up, you know, there's a level of respect for those cultural boundaries that are really important to people for their own ways of being, which seem like they should clash with some of the things that I hold dear, but they never quite seem to. It's more just an acceptance of difference. Hello, I think that's like kind of key, because otherwise we're looking for something that's homogenized, that's been made the same. But part of what I feel is celebrated there in more ways than one is that there's diversity. Even that you go to, you say a town like Alice, you're hanging out with people that if you were living in the city, you'd never be hanging out with, even without looking at race and class and all that sort of stuff.
What about your experiences being queer, working with Indigenous people in Indigenous communities? There's a sort of racism that sometimes occurs where people assume Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people, for that matter, who live in regional, rural and remote places are less civilised and therefore less accepting of queer people.
A lot of us, we work with kids a lot.
With youth.
With youth and kids. Well. And sometimes one of the first things that the kids just ask is like, what the hell are you? Are you? And to me, that's really refreshing. I can come at that because it's not this kind of like evasive, polite, don't want to step on your toes. It's not really making any assumptions, except they're communicating to you that like they don't know what you are. And then I usually feel like, oh, I'm so glad you can tell, you know, that I don't know what I am and that I am this and that. And
are you a boy?
Are you a boy?
Well, sometimes.
One of the terms that gets used a lot there is called acting like a boy, acting like a girl, which means that there's an outward expression of something that bends whatever gender people assume from your physicality that you're going to have. And I really like that. Yeah, I'm busy acting like a boy.
Yeah. Another wonderful demonstration of that queer pride and diversity in Alice Springs is the Pride Festival, which only really just happened for the very first time last year. Oh, no, the year before. And then the second one was last year. And this has been so supported by many businesses, local businesses, as well as Karma Radio, Central Australian Aboriginal Radio Association.
Yes.
Okay. Yep, yep. So Karma Radio support Pride Carnival by providing
the whole,
all of the production and broadcasting live the whole day, all the events. And it's just a great swell of community support and interest. Everyone's there, you know, all kids, families, dogs. It's really quite a wonderful thing. So it's great that this is actually kicked off, and that a lot of people are coming from remote communities, coming in and seeing that there's a community here that they can link in with and
starting to support, you know, family members and young people from remote communities who want to come and be a part of that. And, you know, it's beautiful being on stage there, looking out and seeing, you know, there's all our friends, of course, you know, they're dotted amongst it. There's a row of nanas and like aunties and you know, people of a range of different ages, and, you know, just those kind of things that mean that to me it's really thriving and healthy community. When
it sounds like there's actually diversity
rather than
some
semblance of it or lip service to it.
And there's no in that diversity, that means we don't have that homogeneity. Not that homogeneity at all, like you know, there's no clique or any one particular way of being. It's very, very inclusive, so it's marvellous.
Awesome. I think we can finish it up on that.
It's marvellous.
My name is Lana Wolf, and I was joined in the studio by Eddie Donald and Svetlana Blank from Eddie Donald and the Transients, talking about their stunningly emotive and vividly lyrical music that explores ideas of gender identity, skin colour, isolation, inclusion, questions of privilege and social responsibility, all wrapped up in the red dust beauty of the Australian desert. This podcast was produced by myself, Lana Wolf, with the help of the amazing Chloe Stannard at Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTIQ radio station. The show introduction music is by JR Prime, which is a Massive Attack vs Portishead mix-up called Tears on the Road. A big thank you to Eddie Donald and Svetlana Blank for coming into the studios. The music from Eddie Donald and the Transients played in this podcast is Feet's Ablaze, Boy Lady, Ship to the Ground and Hearts Are Hungry. You can find Eddie Donald and the Transients at www.eddiedonaldandthetransients.com. That's www.eddiedonaldandthetransients.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.